Shut up!
This is Brock and Salk.
I don't read the internet, guys.
Presented by Carter, Volkswagen, and Ballard.
Take the bull by the hands.
On Seattle Sports Station.
And Brook Wire, you are. And Brook, you are.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Let the fire!
Well, it was a big day yesterday, Brock, as we all headed over to T-Mobile Park and met with Scott Service and Jerry DePoto and Justin Hollander. And Jerry, of course, will join us this morning at 8:30. He was on with Wyman and Bob yesterday. It is like Mariners promotional week here. So we start getting
smart.
Ready for spring training.
Yeah, smart.
Truck leaves on Monday. It was jam-packed in there yesterday, Brock. Mm. Busiest it's ever been.
How was parking?
Well, parking was okay. I mean,
did you park far enough away that you were able to get out?
Parked in the lot.
You were able to get out?
Yes. The parking was not necessarily a problem, but okay. There were a lot of people.
Because it can be, right? It can be. As you turn into your parents, parking can be a big deal and a big issue.
Dude, you're relentless. Just relentless.
I was chuckling last night before we get to the Mariners, and yesterday I was so chuckling last night thinking how different our lives were on back-to-back nights. The night before, you were at an author's,
talk.
Talk. And a famous author at that. And last night was Macy's team lost their first league game in 5 years.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And let's just say it was slightly intense.
Really?
Yeah. And her college coach, she's committed to Montana. They're in town. They play. Montana plays Northern Colorado. So the head coach and their assistant came to watch.
Oh, gosh. No.
Yes. Oh, Macy played like a freaking warrior.
Oh, she was good.
Oh, okay. She just was relentless.
Yeah.
Her teammates.
What
are you going to do?
Right.
What are you going to do?
Oh, that's tough.
Oh, it was. Yes. Yeah, so I was just thinking back to back nights how different the Brock and Salk experience was.
Yes.
Not that I wouldn't have enjoyed the author, and you certainly would have loved the competition last night. It was great.
Well, I've seen Macy play before. I watched her at the Northwest School in Bear Creek, had a little battle there, and
yes.
I think they won by about 300 points. It was pretty great.
It was a packed house.
Packed house. A lot of people there.
Expectations high.
Expectations high, news people there. You know what I mean? Like, everybody showed up. Raleigh was there. Teoscar Hernandez was there. They were talking. They had, Major League Baseball representatives talking about the All-Star game and festivities. It was a big day.
Unlike anything we've seen in 14 years?
I'd never seen anything like it.
Yeah.
It was by far the – and it wasn't fake. It wasn't believe big.
Yep.
It wasn't slogans or any of that or, now we go to the next level or any. There was nothing, no promises made. It was just natural interest in a team that had done something special last year and a real, I thought, concentrated effort by the folks in Mariners uniforms or, who work for the team, Mariners brass, to kind of, hey, guys, we got another year now. We got a new team, and we're excited about that team, but it's a new team and a new year, and they're going to work hard, and we're going to try to get back to where we are. Anyway, one of the biggest conversations that we keep seeming to come back to is Jared Kelnick and left field. And when I think about some of the Mariner fan frustration with the offseason, it seems to be sort of focused in two areas, second base, shortstop, the middle infield, and left field, right? DH, fine, maybe, but I think the Mariners are telling you, unless you've got a Nelson Cruz, in his prime, we'd rather rotate through with the DH position. Okay, that's philosophical. And as much as I understand the second base shortstop argument, I think what the Mariners are going to tell you is, look, sorry we didn't want to go spend a gazillion dollars for a guy we're going to have into his 40s. Those guys got overpaid. We trust J.P. Crawford, who we signed and paid. We chose him.
Mm-hmm.
And we traded for Colton Wong, who is an upgrade at second base over last year. It might not be Trey Turner, but we like what we've done. We've gotten better. Okay. I mean, you may not agree with them, but they've got a solid plan.
Mm-hmm.
Left field is a question mark.
Yeah.
Right now, it is Jared Kelnick, maybe Taylor Trammell, maybe Cooper Hummel, and A.J. Pollock. That's what you're looking at in left field, and that is not a guaranteed anything. You have no idea what that's going to be. Right?
Yeah, you know what? I'm chuckling a little bit because I'm thinking of the Chicago Bears. They've never had a quarterback. I mean, Jim McMahon, even in 85, like if you go back and look at the numbers and stuff.
Disaster.
I mean, they have not had a quarterback. It's remarkable. The New York Jets, it's like Joe Willie. They've not had a quarterback. The Mariners have never had a left fielder.
It's always been a problem.
I mean, it is unbelievable. Greg Brierley, loved him in his glasses. Think about the number of left fielders.
I know.
Even since you have been here decade plus.
It's just been a total black hole.
It has.
Everybody has finally found a way to fail in left field for the Mariners. I know. It's really remarkable. Right field's
been
okay.
It's not like the sun, shadows or.
I know.
It's just so difficult to play left field for the Mariners.
Right field's been fine. Center field, they've had some studs, obviously. I mean, not even just Junior and Julio, and then throw in Mike Cameron and Goody took over for a while. I mean, had a lot of success in center field and right field.
Yes.
Left field has obviously been a problem. Yep. Well, this year it's going to be a hole once again, at least to start the year. It's a question mark. And so I wrote about this last night, SeattleSports.com. I think that's a good thing. I know that sounds ridiculous, and I know people are going to get mad at me about it. That's fine. It might be a good thing. Because I went back and started thinking, and I've told you this before, spring training, I was covering the Red Sox years ago, and I remember Theo Epstein right before spring training, same sort of meeting, saying, yeah, we've got a hole that I forget what position it is. Mm-hmm. That's okay. We're good with that. Every major league team has a hole somewhere. Mm-hmm. Every major league team has a question mark somewhere. And it's not a problem. It can be a good thing. We're going to try some things there. And if they work, great. And if they don't work, we have the ability to go improve it over the course of the season. And I think that's exactly what the Mariners are doing right now with Jared Kelnick, A.J. Pollock, and left field. If Jared Kelnick works out in his age 23 season, that would be incredible, right? That would be the single best thing that could possibly happen for the Mariners in left field for the next 5 years. That would be awesome. Mm-hmm. And maybe it'll happen. It definitely won't happen if you don't give him an opportunity. And a runway, as Scott and Jerry talked about yesterday. I actually have some sound of Jerry talking about of Justin Hollander, rather, talking about runway yesterday.
If you never provide a runway for your internal options to get better, to improve, you'll never be sustainable. You'll never be as good as you think you are.
That was on Bump and Stacey yesterday. And he's right. Yep. Right. I mean, if you don't provide a runway, how can they ever get better? That's what happened with Cal Raleigh last year, kind of by accident. But that's what happened. So they're going to give Jared Kelnick some runway to start the year, and they're going to protect him by putting a right-handed hitter to platoon with him to put him in the best position to succeed. If it doesn't work and he has the same lousy start that he's had the last few years, do you think that's going to keep them out of the playoffs? I don't. Two bad months of Jared Kelnick is probably, if that is what keeps you out of the playoffs, I'd be shocked. Mm-hmm. What's going to keep this team out of the playoffs is pitching gets hurt and doesn't pitch the well they have. The bullpen falls apart, right? I mean, they have mass injuries that completely devastate the team.
A little bit of regression at the corners with Ty and Eugenio.
Right. I mean, those are the things that are going to be a problem, not Jared Kelnick doesn't do his job for 2 months. Mm-hmm. Because if he doesn't, and it doesn't work by May, June, July, I don't know what the date is, it's not that hard to go out and trade for a left fielder.
Are you telling me, Salt, in an hour and a half when I asked Jerry DePoto, and I say, I hear sometimes old wise baseball people say, actually a little bit of uncertainty is a good thing. And I say to him, a little bit of uncertainty in left field is a good thing. Do you think he's going to see it that way? Or he's going to say, I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't know.
We have a platoon. We have a A.J. Pollock that just mashes righties.
Right.
And we've got, great internal options. And we certainly don't see it as an uncertainty.
I don't know what he's going to say, because he may hear the idea of general manager of the team or the president of the team saying we've got a question mark there could be taken as I don't like my players. So what he says publicly, I don't know how he will answer that question. But I very firmly believe that they understand that this is a way of handling your business. And if you read the column that I wrote, again, SeattleSports.com.
Oh, I did. Twice.
You'll know that there are some other teams in the league. It's not just the Mariners who have a question mark or two. In fact, some of the highest payroll best teams in baseball have similar issues. So, I don't know. Go read it. See if you in any way feel better about what the Mariners are doing in left field. Did it help you feel any better, Brock?
It did, but there's one line that I'm going to just attack you with.
What's that?
I'm not going to tell you right now.
Oh, you're going to get me
later.
They
call that a TEASE in radio.
You're going to surprise me with it?
Yes.
Oh, man. Now I'm worried that it's coming at any moment. All right. Well, we'll tell you everything you need to know. And at some point, Brock will attack me with my own words. It's coming up on Brock and Salk Seattle Sports on 710 SeattleSports.com.
need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, good news day for the Mariners yesterday, Brock, and it started with exactly what I wanted to hear, and that is that Luis Castillo will not be pitching in the WBC. Jerry DePoto explained more on with Wyman and Bob.
Ideally, it's not a host of your starting pitchers, but, you know, with, especially with the position players and the bullpen guys, we advocate for it. And if we have starting pitchers who want to do it, we've supported them in the past, like with Drew Smyly, like with Felix, we'll support them again in the future if they want to do it. But, you know, in this case, we were fortunate that a handful of guys chose to be in camp with us as opposed to going.
Thank goodness.
So good.
Seriously, I don't know whether I was alone on this one, and I know Moore is just making fun of me because of how much I love Castillo, but I didn't want Luis Castillo pitching in the WBC.
No. There's two things here. Number one, I mean, Moore, Justin, and I are driving down the pottery wheel, okay? And we're going to have that by the table, and you know, we're going to all experience that, and we needed Luis there for that, obviously.
Right.
I mean, you could spin pottery on your own, but it'd be much better.
It's much better
to go
when
see.
I wrap my arms around Luis, vice versa. Luis.
Number two, it's a reminder, Salk. You weren't here last year. You know, everything that he did was on the run, right? He came over at the trade deadline and sprinted the final 2 months of this season. There is something to that culture. There is something to team meetings. There is something to... And I am super glad that he is wanting to be and has made that choice to be a part of it, right? There's going to be a bit of a leadership void. The Carlos Santana and some of the, there's going to be a bit of a leadership void. And not that he is the most vocal, but he's the most talented. And when your most talented people are present and around and accounted for, that's a good thing.
100% agree with that. Dylan Moore signs a 3-year deal reportedly worth around $9 million that avoids 2 years of arbitration, buys out a year of free agency as well. That's good value for a player who you want to get a whole bunch of playing time, it sounds like, this year against lefties at both second base and shortstop. He steals you bases. He can play the outfield. He's versatile. Absolutely worth that price, right? So I kind of like that deal. Good for him. Takes care of him for the immediate future. And then finally, Mariners win their arbitration case against Diego Castillo. Wasn't a huge difference, but they do win that arbitration case.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
All right, so I really like this, Brock. You sent this yesterday. ESPN throwing some potential numbers at what it would cost for a Geno Smith deal. Brady Henderson played the role of the team and offered 3 years, $90 million, 50 guaranteed. And then Dan Graziano, playing the role of Geno Smith, said, yeah, I'll take it. Well, I would take it, too, if I were Geno Smith. $30 million a year for the next 3 years, two of them guaranteed? Uh-huh. I'm just not convinced the Seahawks make that offer, and I don't think they should. It's just too much money to spend for me. Not on Geno Smith, because I think he would get it somewhere else, but on a quarterback who's not at the top level. And I understand. It's not 40 or 50 million, that it's actually a reasonable amount. I get it. I want to either spend big money on one of the best quarterbacks, or I want to spend no money on somebody else and see what I can do.
Yeah, and if yesterday was somewhat bad news with the whole Tom Brady announcing his retirement, bad news for the Seahawks and Geno's market in the case it's going to ramp it up, well, then that was yesterday morning. Yesterday afternoon was a little better news because Sam Fran and Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch asked very specifically at their season-ending press conference, hey, you know, any chance, can you write a script for Jimmy G coming back? No. Actually, Kevin Calabro-esque, no, he's not going to be here.
We'll see.
He will be on that market, you know, and he will be one of those guys, like, you know, Stokely said to us yesterday, gosh, as you evaluate Geno, it was 1 year. I mean, Jimmy G's had multiple years.
Yeah, but he gets hurt every year. Geno played every snap.
Jacoby Brissett.
I'm telling you, man, Geno's going to get paid somewhere, and I just
3 years,
don't see.
90, 50, I can't do it.
I couldn't do it either. Now, could you do, well, you know, we'll dig into it a little bit more later.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Brock, you've been calling for these fun games at the Pro Bowl for years. They started a few years ago, and now they're kind of going all in. The Seahawks will be well represented. So Tariq Woolen's going to play dodgeball. Geno Smith will be in the accuracy competition, of course.
Yep.
I think he'll be good at that. Quandre Diggs is going to be in the lightning round, and then Jason Myers in kick-tack-toe. All four will play in the flag football game. Mm. Of those four, who is best at what they're going to be doing?
Kick-tack-toe. Whatever that is. Actually, Geno's going to be very good at that accuracy deal, too. And Tyler Huntley and Jared Goff, some of the competition is the highest rung.
Yeah.
I think Geno's going to be pretty darn good at that.
What do you think about Tariq Woolen and dodgeball? See, I'm imagining him really good at catching balls thrown at him.
Yes.
But I'm struggling to see him whipping dodgeballs at people and getting them out.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
It doesn't seem like that's him. Now, I could be wrong.
And Jason Myers is not getting to do the long drive, huh? Because I think he's a pretty good golfer. Mm. I don't think Gino or Tariq or Quandre, I don't think I want to see them in the long drive competition. I don't think.
You don't think Gino's a golfer?
I don't know. I don't.
Strikes me as a golfer.
Does he really? Yeah. Doesn't strike me as a golfer. Doesn't strike me as a golfer. I know Jason is, though. But, yeah, I think they'll be, A, well-represented, and I think with kick-tac-toe and accuracy. Wouldn't be surprised if those two Seahawks are very competitive. Yeah,
we'll find out. Meanwhile, Senior Bowl practices all this week. Brock, I know you've been watching at least an hour of practice a night. So is John Schneider, who's down there. Michael Sean DeGar saying that he has been watching the trenches very carefully, as he should be. It's everything you need to know. Do that every hour, quarter past the hour, here on the new Brock and Salk Show.
I have told you that Mel Kiper is set to join us.
Yes, 7:30, Mel Kiper Jr.
So Mel is of the old school. Okay, so Mel is like of the Chris Berman old school. Like Chris Berman used to have to get things faxed.
Yes.
Didn't have an email. Bill Walton-esque in my conversations with Jason Benetti. When you try to track down and communicate with Bill Walton or Chris Berman, Mel had like 8 different numbers. And I was like, okay, well, I'll try all 8 of them. And then an email. And so we connected, but I've given him the hotline. So I just want to put a little, there might be a little more sec.
Years ago when I was working in Bristol doing national stuff, I had Mel on. And I tried really hard to see if I could, like, get him an intern. Mm. I was like, Mel, it seems like you're doing too much work. And so what if we, like, had a little competition here to see? I don't want an intern. I got to do it all myself.
Just get a little administrative help.
No, he wouldn't do that. He's like, I got to do it all myself. He's got some Clayton to him. They've got some similar, you think?
Oh,
like, they're from the same era. They have some real similarities. So I am looking forward
to it. His database goes back to 1983. Now.
He's a significant database guy.
40-some years, just like JC. Yes, absolutely. Lots and lots in that database.
All right, well, looking forward to talking to Mel Kiper Jr. He's the man who started the entire mock draft movement, and he will join us next. Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.
You're listening to Brock and Salk,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio
on Seattle Sports Station.
All right, waiting on Mel Kiper Jr., set to join us here in just a couple of minutes. Brock and Salk, of course, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com. If you remember, his mock draft was an interesting one, mock 1.0. Mm-hmm. He had the Seahawks starting off with Will Levis, quarterback from Kentucky at number 5, and then Byron Young, kind of an edge guy from Tennessee, at number 20. So that was Mel's initial 1.0 mock draft for the Seahawks.
Kind of chalky, right? All the names that we've been talking about for the last few months, the Jalen Carters, the Bryce Youngs, the Will Anderson. So kind of everybody went chalk before you, and you were kind of left there, and are you going to go QB or D-end? Right? Are you going to go big boy? And by the way, there's a reason Schneider's not watching the QBs down at the Senior Bowl. Because other than Jake Haener is a mid to late rounder, there's nobody else to
Max
watch.
Dugan?
Max Dugan, not an NFL guy. No. Great college player. Will be an awesome CFL player. Maybe, seventh round, or will certainly get into camp. But no, does not project to be an NFL kind of guy. But there are some big dudes, man. In Blue 88, I got a name for you that I just, and once I give it to you and tell you about him, Salky, you're going to be like, you're going to be in. You're going
to
be.
It doesn't take that much to sell me, right? I mean, I think you know how to sell me at this point, so I'm kind of excited about it. This is a big boy?
Oh, the biggest of big boys.
The biggest. Is this the guy with the wingspan?
Exciting.
Yeah. I heard about it. Yeah.
We'll talk about him a little bit.
He's got arms longer than Mora's fingers. It's gigantic.
Yes, he does. Yeah. Mora, too, is now going to be rooting like with pom-poms
harder. No, she's not.
Yes, she is.
I don't think she is.
To take the attention away from Pringle's fingers and now give it to the longest arms ever measured in the history of the Senior
People
Bowl.
Were crushing Mora's fingers yesterday at the Mariners event. Yeah, it's reached epic proportion at this point.
Is that true?
All right, I brought in, for the next time this came up.
Oh, no. What
I brought out there? Some stuff.
Oh, gosh, if people are watching on the stream, Seattle Sports.
Is that better?
Gosh.
Are those Grinch hands?
Hold on. Let me take a picture of that. Hold on.
I found them on Amazon.
Let's see. This is what Moore is wearing right now. She's got bright green, almost Seahawks action green colored Grinch hands instead of fingers.
Oh, my God. Did you
were those extra large?
Now you can't see my hands.
Did you think about wearing those yesterday to the Mariners luncheon? Was there a little part of you that was like, huh, I might have to have a little fun?
And every time you talk to somebody, do that thing where like you put your hand on your chin and you kind of like you're thinking. You're just constantly using it.
More those are awesome. Can you run the board with
those? I'm going to start charging for people to see my hands. This is becoming a thing.
Only hands.
Can you run the only hands? Onlyfingers.com. Can you run the board still with that?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
We're good. We'll see. If you hear any mistakes, it's because I have Grinch hands now.
Well, that's fine. So that's a perfectly good excuse, I think. Can you dial the phone if we need to get Mel Kiper Jr., who seems to be blowing us off?
I might need to take him off for the phone.
Oh, man.
I'm telling you, this is a little challenge of that generation, and Mel comes from that day, because just to try to nail down communication, we were all set over the weekend, we were all set on Monday, and trying to track it down and make it happen today. So just be aware, could happen at any time, certainly not an hour from now when Jerry DePoto is on with us. So can we spin this back to that whole Geno thing?
Please do.
So yesterday, and this is going to be, I think, a theme, not just here in Seattle, because as Brady Henderson said to us earlier in the week, Salk, there's a good 14 markets. So much like the head coaching carousel was the slowest it ever was, I can't ever remember, certainly in our time of covering this and doing this, that there were ever this many opportunities at quarterback. Like, if I'm coming out of school, and I remember when I came out of school in 99, that was a year that was just loaded, right? That was Akili Smith and Cade McNown and Tim Couch, number one, and Sean King, even in the second round, Dante Culpepper. I mean, and that year, there were certainly a number of franchises, Philly, Cleveland, Cincy, that needed QBs through the draft. Can you ever remember 14 as we went through that exercise?
And it was 14, by the way. That was after I even poo-pooed. Or you poo-pooed a couple more options.
Well, yeah, you were like
Kirk
Cousins in Minnesota, and you know, some of these that I think just contractually are fairly entrenched.
Well, you say yes, but that doesn't mean they're not potential quarterback draft options, right? So you say Minnesota's entrenched with Kirk Cousins. I agree with you, and they're not going to trade up to the top five to get either C.J. Stroud or Bryce Young. Could they be an Anthony Richardson? Could they be a Will Levis? Mm-hmm. Could they be, who's the guy you like from UCLA? I mean, like,
DTR. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so no, you're right. They're probably not going to be in the free agency market trying to come up with another quarterback to replace Kirk Cousins. That wouldn't work.
Yes.
But when you're thinking about the quarterback situation in general, are they first or second round possibility? Yeah. In fact, if I'm Minnesota, I'm probably taking a quarterback in the first or second round, to be perfectly honest with you. Kirk Cousins is getting up there. He's good, not great. Yeah, I think I probably am thinking about that. Our buddy over there, Phil, who works for Score North, I mean, he spends most of his life trashing Kirk Cousins and saying that the Vikings need to do better.
Okay. So this is one of those elements that last year when you were just, dark and last year when you got flipped on your head like a goalie, like in December and January of last year, and you were like, gosh, I'm blue. Like everything that I thought I knew, I don't know anymore. Like everything that I thought about the NFL, it's just turned on its head last year, right? In a lot of different ways. And I know I'm over-exaggerating that, but not really. I mean, there were some of these old tried and true, like, yeah, this is the way it is. And this is the way it's always been. We're starting to see this QB flip in a way that is breaking a lot of those barriers, man. And I think Tom Brady, frankly, started it 3 years ago. If Tom Brady can move on from New England, then why in the world can't you move on from Russell Wilson? Why can't you move on from Deshaun Watson? Why can't you find quarterbacks in different ways? Why can't you go and trade? Like, it is the fact that we have 14 legitimate places or opportunities is this a good thing for football? Is this yet again kind of another just evolution? Like, gosh, doesn't this just add to it that much more? Right? Instead of having, you know, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 or just, you know, guys drafted, because you never let go.
Mm-hmm.
You never let go of your franchise quarterback. Well, until you do. And then when you do and you're actually better in Seattle, right? I mean, hold on a second. We better like reevaluate this thing. And so, yeah, this is, We're going to be talking about this a whole bunch. So now spin it to the column that ESPN put together. Really cool. They reached out to all of their guys that cover the teams in their cities and used Dan Graziano, a background in some of the agency and management and stuff, to figure out the deals. And what Brady Henderson proposed is a three-year, $90 million deal with 50 guaranteed for Geno.
Dagging it.
I can't do it, man.
As the Seahawks.
And I don't want to count his pockets. Who am I to count a man's pockets? Right? Mike, we've also, hey, you got to all shift your optics here. Because what you thought back in the day, $30 million was a lot. Joe Burrow's going to get 50, 55 per. So you may need to also, with the salary cap growing, like you also need to kind of shift some gears here. Right? There are NBA dudes making $50 million a year. Right, there's baseball dudes making $30-40 million a year. There's already QBs making 45 and Aaron at 50. So, I mean, I think there's a part of it, and certainly part of the audience would say, "What are you talking about, you two? That's a 3 years, 90 million, spread it out. That's a win-win." I just can't. I don't know, Salky. I just can't. I can't pull the trigger on that.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's funny because it's people are going to hear that and say, you don't believe in Geno Smith. You don't like Geno Smith. What are you talking about? He deserves it. He
sort of like Bump it, and Stacy. Are they on board with that?
I don't know. Let's ask them.
Yeah. Okay. Because I know that, you know, just in listening to a lot of the imaging and the promos and some of their show.
I think they will be. I'll text them here in the next break. Okay. And I'll ask both of them if they would do it. But I would guess that their answer would both be yes. I think. And obviously, Brady's the one who suggested it, Brady Henderson. So, you know, he seems like he'd be in line. So I told you, I texted with Brady a little bit afterwards and was like, hey, love your column. Thanks for coming on the other day. You're great. I can't do it if I'm the Seahawks. It's just too much money. And by the way, I disagree with you. If he gets to free agency, I think he's gone because somebody's going to offer him money that the Seahawks aren't going to want to comp. But he said, okay. He kind of went back and forth a little bit. And he's like, what about 3 years, 75 with 45 guaranteed? Will you do that?
That starts to smell a little better.
Doesn't it?
It does.
But if you're Geno Smith, I'm telling you to take a hike. Right? I'm not going to say yes to that. No way. Somebody's going to give me $30 million plus in free agency. You could take your 22 and forget it.
Yep.
I'm not interested in that.
This is also, and Stokely said this yesterday, and it just kind of, I think you got it on your cut sheet there, talking about it being a one-year deal. And when he said it, coming from a guy that did it, Mike, for 15 years. A guy that won Super Bowls, right? A guy that does radio now and is in the media a little bit. A guy that, you know, just at times, and even when he's a teammate of mine, just had kind of a common sense that you're like, oh, yeah, that's pretty accurate. He only did do it for one. You got that cut? You want to play? This was Stokely with us yesterday, just talking about Geno. A, he thinks the deal is going to be done, but he also doesn't think he's going to get overpaid necessarily because it really is, when he's trying to look at his track record, a one-hit wonder.
Yeah, he's wrong.
I think they end up working it out there in Seattle, figuring something out because I think it's best for both parties. I don't know another team that's going to give Geno a lot of money. Now, I don't know if Seattle wants to, you know, pay him at all or not, but I don't know if another team after 1 year wants to, you know, take that type of risk on Geno Smith.
Hey, you mentioned that he and Peyton are best friends. When they talk to each other, do they ever get confused about who's talking? They sound almost identical.
Really?
I think so.
Oh,
yeah.
Funny.
I think they sound very similar.
Whew. Yeah, they're real close. I think Peyton talks a little faster.
Yeah, maybe.
Peyton, you know, he's been able to pick
there's up a lot of similarity.
So you think there will be multiple suitors willing to pay for that body work?
I don't know about multiple. You only need one.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I think somebody is going to be willing to pay because it's not crazy money, as everybody has said. It's not out of control. And if you're a team that thinks that's the missing piece, if you're Washington, if you're a few of these other groups, like, yeah, I think it makes sense to sign Geno Smith to a $30, $35 million a year deal to do what Brady suggested, 3 years, $90 million and 50-something guaranteed. Yeah, I think somebody out there says yes to that.
Yeah, this is where there's a little divide with you and I. And it's so fun because it makes conversation that much better. I think there's a big part of you that still believes the NFL starts in the end is for Neanderthal and that they're just a bunch of, you know, buffoons that unfortunately do have some smart people. And there are certainly some that set themselves apart, but there still is groupthink and there still is Neanderthal and there still is somebody that's going to overpay. I tend to think kind of like baseball. I tend to think in this day and age of information, and I can point to the draft, maybe the last couple of years. I can point to Russell being traded. I can point to people making a few smarter decisions out there, Salk. And actually, you just mentioned Washington. Washington just spent how much on Carson Wentz in 1 year?
Well, that's what I was about to say. I was mind blanking on his name, Carson Wentz.
Yeah.
But somebody's going to spend money on Geno Smith. They just spent money on Carson Wentz.
I don't know. I think those somebody's go, that was dumb.
Wentz was bad, which is why it was dumb.
Hold on.
Wentz hadn't had a good season in half a decade. Geno Smith is coming off a top 5 or 10 quarterback season. Somebody is going to say there's something there and it's worthwhile, especially if we can put him into a good situation.
Baker Mayfield, $18 million.
Not coming off a good year.
Not good ROI.
Not coming off a good year. Not coming off health.
Carson Wentz, 20-something million, not good ROI. Matt Ryan, not good ROI. I think that there's enough people around that look at that and go, that's just not a good rate. And, oh, by the way, I know the cap went up, but there's not a lot of teams. So the Seahawks are sixth in cap space at $34 million. Take away $10 million because of draft picks. And, again, these are somewhat flexible, movable numbers. But this isn't like there's five teams with $100 million lined up. Jacksonville spent their money. The Jets have spent some of their money over the years, right? And, again, I just think that there's going to be – and, oh, by the way, you know, this whole conversation that we've had about team, build the team, or just dump it all in the quarterback. Build the team or dump it all in the quarterback.
But it's not dumping it all in the quarterback. It's some money. It's significant money, but it's not the 50-something million that Patrick Mahomes and others are getting. Yeah. It's a significant step down from that, and I think there will be at least one, if not multiple teams, that say, yeah, give me the middle ground. I'm good with that. If I'm the Seahawks, I don't think I can do it, not because I don't like Geno, but because I don't know how you get better while doing that.
Yes.
You need to get so much better on your defensive line and on your defense in general. I don't know how you do it while spending even 30-something million on a quarterback. But for another team, for a team that doesn't have that problem, I can absolutely understand how you do that.
Well, I think most of those other teams, and I'm thinking just conference-wise here in the NFC that we watched, most of those other teams are like Seattle and do have significant holes. They're not like the Mariners with just one hole in left field, right? They do have some issues that Philly and San Francisco were clearly the head of the class. The Tampa has got a whole bunch of issues as a playoff winner. That whole NFC South has issues. Minnesota can't play defense. Green Bay is, you know, $50 million over the cap. Like, I think as you kind of peel those back a little bit and look at everyone else, you realize they're kind of in the same boat that you are.
Yeah, maybe. But I still will put my lack of faith in NFL ownership that somebody out there will spend some money on Geno Smith. Yep. Now, good question being asked by a friend of mine. And this is probably one. This is be a good argument on your side of this, Brock, but I'll make it for you.
Oh, thank you.
Do you think Geno Smith sells tickets for a new owner?
No.
Probably not.
Mm-mm.
And if you're it's a good question. Mm-hmm. If you're an owner out there, and certainly they are concerned about those things, does he sell tickets in the off season? No. Probably not. Now,
does he walk into your building?
But if he helps your team win?
Does he walk into your building and change the temperature of your team?
I mean,
Geno Smith did it here. He had 4 years of background. There was some trust and some comfort, and there was a lot of injection.
Can he take some of that and bring it somewhere else? Maybe. I don't know. I mean, Russell Wilson obviously couldn't. Maybe he can, and maybe if he goes to the right situation, he's exactly the person to do that.
I don't think he wants to do that.
And by the way, maybe he doesn't. I don't know that he does either. He just wants to get paid.
That's right.
I don't blame him. Yep. I'd want to get paid, too, if I were Geno Smith. And if somebody else can offer me $30-plus million, see you later. I'm gone.
This is Brock and Salk's Blue 88.
Blue 88!
We take you to the field as Brock Huard breaks down three football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
All right, Brock, you kind of teased this earlier. Who is the Tariq Woolen super freak of this draft class?
His name is Julius Brents.
Brents?
Yeah, I'm going to give you two names. Write this down. Okay, pull your phone out and your glasses.
Yeah, I got it.
Okay, pull both those things out. Put them in your notes. All right? Hold
on. Notes,
yes. Yes, pull up your notes. By the way, did you tweet? Because I can't multitask. Did you tweet the fingers?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good. Okay. Look forward to that.
Big time.
Julius Brents is a cornerback that some are looking at as a safety. I think he is a corner. He is out of Kansas State. I saw him multiple times, and you know how I am with Kansas State guys. Kind of like
them. They're your thing.
Yeah, kind of like Cooper Beebe, their interior lineman, too, because you're just kind of tough. You're blue collar. You know how to work. You shut your mouth. You grind. That's just what you do in Manhattan, Kansas, a football player. This guy will be Tariq Woolen at the combine. He'll be 6'4", long arms. He's going to run. He won't run as fast as Tariq, but he'll be the probably low 4.4s. He'll jump somewhere around 44 inches. And right now he's a third round grade. Right now he is an intriguing guy. I am with you. I am. And if I was with John Schneider and Michael Sean Duggar down there at the combine, I'd be watching the big people and I'd have to fight everything to say, don't look at corners. Don't look at receivers. Don't look at corners. Don't look at receivers. Look at big people. But eventually, right, as you get into the later rounds and you just want to find a freakish athlete. And by the way, he's got a lot more ball skills and background at corner. He'd been a corner. He was at Iowa. He transferred to Kansas State.
But he's going to what round?
Right now, he's a third rounder.
Okay.
Right now, that's kind of where people are projecting him. Combine, he'll probably bump up. Tariq Woolen's year last year will probably help him with his go-go gadget arms and being that length and being that athletic. But keep an eye on Julius Brents out of Kansas State.
All right, I'm looking forward to that. And who's the other?
Oh, that's it. That's all I got for you.
You said you had two.
Oh, no, I'm going to give you the other one in the next question.
Oh, all right. Question number two. Seahawks still need some help at offensive line, especially in the interior of that O-line. Anybody there that they should be looking at?
Well, this is what I really wanted to ask Mel, and I hope we can connect with him at some point, either today or certainly down the road. Because this is my, more than million-dollar question. DeJuan Jones. DeJuan with a D. 6'8", 375.
That's pounds. Is that a real thing?
That's pounds. He's 6'8", 375 pounds. He had the longest wingspan in the history of the Senior Bowl. It will be the longest in the history of the Combine. He has a wingspan of a 7'5", man. 89 4/8 inch wingspan. He played tackle. You know how many sacks he gave up at the Ohio State University last year? Zero. Zero sacks is a right tackle at Ohio State. Can he slide in and be a guard? Roger and Tacoma?
Can he draft a guard?
Can he slide in and play guard? Can Abe Lucas slide in from right? Would Abe Lucas slide in from right tackle to play guard? Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, you've got in Abe Lucas, you've seen him on the field, 6'6", 6'7", 3 whatever, and an athlete running 4'9". And this guy's athletic. Now, he's not twitchy, but he's got unbelievably powerful hands. He gets his hands on you, it is over. He's right now slated as kind of a second round, but he too, just write him in your notes, put him in your phone.
All right, I got him. DeJuan with a D.
Do you know what you want, Salk? You want big people. Do you know what you want to block? You want to be able to block the Fletcher Coxes and the Aaron Donalds?
Yeah.
You know what you need? You need big people. You need girth. You need power. You need strength. Keep an eye on that guy.
D stands for destined to be a Seahawk.
Because I am.
All right, question number three. Anybody that you want back, as you start thinking about Seahawk free agents, we kind of ran through some of these, who's gone, who's staying, etc.
Yep.
Anybody that you feel like you got to have back?
I think one of the more intriguing guys on that free agent list is Austin Blythe, the center. Especially if you're thinking about doing what you're doing at quarterback. When you're thinking about leaning into system and our system, the key cog right there in that system with the quarterback is your center. And I thought Austin Blythe this year solidified so many things. Finished his seventh year. He's an undersized guy. He's going to have to fight like crazy to be available, as he did this year, right? He got nicked up a few different times, and that's just going to be a story because he's not big. And when you're blocking the dudes you have to block in this league, you're going to get beat down and worn down over the course of a year. He was a one-year, $4 million deal. Before that, he had been largely league minimum in Kansas City for a year, bulk of his career with the Rams in this system. I'd like to see Austin Blythe at the right number. Not wave, certainly not even wave two. But when we get to April, I hope the market looks at it and says, yeah, okay, kind of been there, done it, just a guy. Because for you and your system, that's an important piece, man. Mm. That communication is an important piece.
So
your backup
back
center, Fuller, by the way, is also an unrestricted free agent.
Right.
So not only do you not have a quarterback room right now, you know what else you don't have? A center room right now. Little Joey Hunt, I don't know if they picked up his deal off the practice squad or not, but that's about it. So just keep an eye on that communication piece, that center position. Don't want him at $4 million. Don't want him at $3 million. Frankly, don't even want him at $2 million. I want him on league minimum with some incentives.
So let me, that's today's Blue 88. It's an interesting thing. I got to push back on you in two ways on the Austin Blythe thing. So look, you know me. I'm not sitting here judging interior offensive line play. So I don't really know.
I mean, who is?
I don't know, but a lot of people are, and many of them have said that Austin Blythe had a terrible year and he wasn't good and he's been crushed, et cetera. And the last time you said you liked him, I read a whole bunch of tweets and stuff like Brock's lost it. This guy's terrible, et cetera.
Okay.
So what of that? And then secondly, in question two, you tell me that if you want to move those big guys, you better get big guys.
Yes.
And then in question three, you tell me Austin Blythe is undersized, but you want him.
Yeah,
help me out here. Help me understand.
Well, because you're center, that's the one guy that can be a little undersized. Okay. Look at little Robbie Toback. Look at the little engine that could.
Okay.
Right?
So that's guards that need to be huge. A center doesn't need to be.
Yeah. I mean,
even though they're oftentimes dealing with the same players.
I mean, if this league was full of Ted Washingtons and 3-4 defenses and you had a 400 pounder on your nose week in and week out, then we're talking a different story. This league is full of, you know, all sorts of mixed fronts, full of a lot of pressure, full of much more athletic interior guys where you do have to have communication, where you do have to have anticipation and movement and pickup stunts and everything. Was Austin Blythe great this year? Absolutely not. No, I'm not going to sit here and crown Austin Blythe as the best center in the league. But when you don't have a QB room and you don't have a center room right now, personnel-wise, it's kind of a big deal. Mm-hmm. And oh, by the way, this is not a great draft for centers. There's not you know, a consensus. There's not a couple guys. There's some decent players. There's no Creed Humphrey in Kansas City, right, out of Oklahoma.
This is why you had that trade that you were looking at, right? Didn't you want to trade for Mitch Morse?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
See, so, I remember.
Yeah.
We get a lot
what
of
were my two guys' names today?
Julius Brents.
Good.
And DeJuand Jones.
And by the way, yeah. Aaron Goldsmith did an Ohio State game with me a couple years ago.
Yeah.
DeJuand Jones, on film, had the biggest jersey I've ever seen in my life.
Wow.
And he didn't tuck it in. And I'm
That's never a good look.
So do you know what we did the day before in the production meeting? I asked the SID, I said, hey, is there any chance you can go to the equipment room and see if you can grab DeJuand's jersey?
Throw that right on Aaron.
I'd like to see what it looks like on Aaron.
Things were a little awkward with Aaron yesterday, not going to lie. When he kicked me in the knee and tried to end my ability to come into work so that he could take my job, I thought that was awkward. I survived. Oh God, Maura's got her fingers back on. Oh geez, just very distracting.
Back on. I've been wearing them.
Oh really? They're behind the computer, so I didn't see them.
And warm.
Somebody said it gave strong Scarecrow from Wizard of Oz vibes.
Oh man, those look
Someone said it was making the situation worse, but I feel like you can't see my fingers as much.
Well, I mean, they definitely attracts attention to them.
Yeah.
They don't exactly blend in. They're action green. All right.
Shed a lot.
What do you think,
Brock? It kind of looks like the Philly fanatic, like,
they sort of
grooming
like
himself back here.
Yep.
Wow. He should stop doing that. That sounds very inappropriate. We'll be right back. It's Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710. SeattleSports.com.